Welcome to the Plant Spirit Podcast on connecting with plant consciousness and the healing wisdom of nature. If you'd like to learn more on how to communicate directly with plants, visit www.learnplantlanguage.com to register for the free workshop. That's www.learnplantlanguage.com. I'm your host, Sarah Artemisia, and I am deeply honored to introduce our next guest to the show today. Sherelle Washington is an herbal teacher, consultant, speaker, dancer, and martial artist. She's an instructor at the Berkeley Herbal Center, Scarlet Sage's Community Classes, the Landiverse Apprentice Herbal Certification Program, and at the Northern California Women's Herbal Symposium. Sherelle also teaches dance and Qigong and is the founder of Exalted Natural Body Care and Botanicals. So Sherelle, thank you so much for being here today. Such a joy and honor to have you here with us.
Thank you so much. What a lovely introduction. Thank you so much, Sarah. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. And such an honor to have you here. And I'm excited to dive in and would love to just start with the juicy topic of what is Black North American herbalism?
Awesome. Black North American herbalism, simply stated, is the study of how African and African enslaved descendants interacted with the plants here on the North American continent. And it's also the study of the plant history and also methods and also preparations of how African enslaved descendants interacted with plants on the North American continent. Now, the term itself is not a historical term. It's actually a term that I created in collaboration with Landiverse. And so it was really a class that I really wanted to specifically speak to how, as I mentioned, African enslaved descendants interacted with plants, specifically here on the North American continent. I know that when we talk about African American or Black American herbalism, there's also the inclusion of herbs from the African continent. But my thought there is that Africa being such a very large continent and being a continent of billions of people, and then within each country, there are so many different ethnic groups and different languages, it's very difficult to really speak to African herbs or plants in kind of under one umbrella. And so each country, each culture, each language, they have their distinct and unique ways and plants that are specific to each region that all Africans don't know about. But my focus in teaching this class is to bring knowledge, to bring awareness, and to educate about how African Americans or African enslaved descendants interacted here with plants. And there's plenty of historical data that speaks to that, that I present in my research and I also present in my classes as well.
So powerful. And yeah, I'd love to hear more about what brought you to this subject.
Well, my grandmother, who was my first herbal teacher, and she being from the Deep South herself, and she having been raised on a ranch. And so she's being raised around animals and plants in ways in which our great grandparents, most of them grew up being connected to a farm or to the land or land stewardship. So that was her as well. Also, just a little bit further, her mother was a midwife, you know, and so just that whole connection. And then, of course, how she taught me, and then just seeing how she and other elders, Black elders, they had a connection to the land. My great grandmother, Sang, who was from the Deep South, who was half Black and half Native American, she knew how to garden and she knew how to process animals and she knew how to pickle. And so just seeing those ways growing up, that kind of gave me some strong imprints about just knowing that African Americans or Black Americans have had have this history of land stewardship. But also, as I was going through my herbal education in school, I just saw an absence of this knowledge. And I even saw an absence even of Native American herbal knowledge. So really, what I saw in my education was definitely this attention to European herbal ways and European pagan traditions around herbalism, around earth. Those things are still taught in a lot of schools. And then there's maybe some tangential mentioning of Ayurveda or traditional Chinese medicine, but specifically the contributions of my ancestors and my community was absent. And so what I decided to do was to begin studying and researching and kind of cataloging different materials and resources that I collected and would catalog so that I then think this is something that I can put together to actually teach so that it could become a part of herbal training in different schools across the country. And so I've been blessed to be able to start with that at Land of Birth, but to also be able to offer it to other institutions. And then eventually, in the immediate future, I'll be writing a book that will hopefully serve as an educational tool that can be taught and that people can also have an actual item that they can actually refer to and have so that, you know, here are some cataloged historical references and data that really prove that African enslaved descendants were experts at working with plants and coming up with many remedies to address a numerous host of maladies, especially during the time of slavery and also post-slavery.
Well, that is incredible that you're doing that work. Thank you so much. That is a treasure for this planet. I'm so excited for your book to come out. And, you know, we were talking a little bit before this about how, in my perspective, there are as many ways to connect with plants as there are people in the world. And when we don't hear the stories and ways of connecting and ways of working with herbal medicine and different types of plants that multiple different people all around the world have been working with for eons, for thousands and thousands of years, the whole world suffers. That is a loss to the collective human consciousness. And so thank you so much for bringing this forward with Black North American herbalism. It's so, so important and such an incredible legacy that you are bringing forward here. And particularly with that understanding of both the different plants, different ways of working with the plants, I'm curious to hear in your perspective, what does Black North American herbalism really have to do with understanding plants?
Well, the thing that I say to people in teaching my class is, without people, do you really have an understanding of plants per se? Because what you have with African Americans, as well as with other people, you have a record of the human experience with plants. You have a record of how humans cultivated plants. You have a record of how humans use plants to help, to support, to help heal. So you have that wonderful exchange between humans and plants. And so that has everything to do with plant interaction. But with that in specifics, you have specific methods, you have specific perspectives. And that is that you also understand that there's a whole body, a whole mind, spirit, a perspective that also they use the plants to help address as well. You also have specific ways in which they interacted with plants, you know, how they were when they were around plants. You know, you have that historical data and piece as well. And so it's not separated out per se that the plants just over here and they're kind of doing their own thing. But what you have is you have a record of how people interacted with these created things and how they utilized them for the benefit of the collective. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. On that note, I'm curious, is there a plant or two that you'd be open to sharing about that you've been working with recently, and either a personal story or a client experience, something that you've witnessed with this plant that you just absolutely love that you'd like to share?
Well, gosh, I mean, there's quite a bit, but I know since my research, I definitely have enjoyed interacting with Asafoetida. You know, and I really have enjoyed connecting with the plants of my foreparents. I even enjoy interacting with collard greens in a different way, because it's not just a food source, but they're also understanding it as a medicinal source. But I will go back to asafoetida, because I only remember that plant through story, hearing about it from the elders in my family. You know, it's asafoetida bags. They were from my husband's family. He was from the deep south too, talking about asafoetida bags and asking me about it. And so when I actually uncovered it in my research, and then I actually got a hold of it, it's like, oh, now I have a connection to it. And that's another thing is, you know, one of the things I do like to teach in class is simple ways that we could connect with plants. And one of those ways, of course, is just growing plants. Like, if you're able to grow plants, even as in your container, you know, and you're seeing it and you're touching it and you're smelling it, then you have this tactile relationship. That's great. And the other way is, how do you get that into your body? And I like to always recommend tea, because tea is such an old, ancient ritual that every human being, we interact with tea. We've had different ways in which you make it, but we interacted with that way. So asafoetida being a gum resin, it gave me an opportunity to, you know, how do I drop into this plant in different ways? So I tried it as a tea and I didn't quite like it. But so it seems to, I like to make it as a syrup with molasses, which is a common way that it was also interacted with from our early African Americans as well. So that's the one plant that I've gotten quite a bit of benefit from. And I also use it in what I make my signature fire train, fire cider. Is that's the signature ingredient is asafoetida as well. Another plant that comes to me immediately is St. John's wort. That's a plant that's within the African American Materia Medica. Now, you know, in school, they say, oh my gosh, you can only interact with that plant if it's fresh, and you can only, you know, but I, like last year, I started interacting with it in dry form. And so one of the things that I did after I harvested it, I let it hang dry, and I was still able to make a very vibrant, you know, that vibrant crimson red tincture oil, which is really nice. And then this morning, I don't know if you can see because it's blurry, but I do have a tea made with St. John's and cleavers in dry form. And so I really been on this journey of just finding different ways to interact with St. John's. I've also been able to use it as an assault to infuse salt with St. John's and fresh flower and use that as well. So just also testing the boundaries and see how far and how many ways I can interact with that particular plant. So those are the two that come to my mind immediately. I'm sure there'll be others as we go, but those pop into my head right now, those two plants.
Well, I love that you also bring in this aspect that you just shared about that you like to explore the different ways, like working with St. John's in a salt. It's amazing that you do that, just exploring these different ways to infuse the plants into the various different realms of life. That it's just amazing. For folks who aren't familiar with asafoetida, could you share a little bit more about that plant?
Yes, exactly. So asafoetida is also known as giant fennel. And it is a plant that is native specifically to North Africa. But it was brought here by African enslaved people. But it doesn't grow well here. Especially in like the West Coast. It may grow in some parts of the South, but it's one of those plants that its natural habitat is North African, kind of dry, kind of sandy, that type of heat. It needs that kind of plant. But actually, it looks like a fennel, but it's not. But it's called giant fennel because of how it looks. And so the part of the plant that is used is the root. And then the root, from there, they collect the gum and the resin from the root, and then they process that. And then that is asafoetida, which is extremely pungent, very, very, very pungent. And that plant is used as a food flavoring in throughout India, Southeast Asia, through Egypt, Iran, Iraq, Morocco, in many different parts, other parts of the world. And if I had to give it a description, it's kind of like a cross between an onion and a garlic. It's really, really, really pungent. And so in the old days, in the days of enslavement, Africans used to put the resin in a sack and tie that sack around the neck. Or for children, they would tie it around the waist. And for babies, they would put it in a molasses. And so just breathing in the pungency, the aromatics of the plant is also a way, it's like an aromatherapy to help thwart off illnesses. But also that was a common way and a quick way to do that as well. But another way was definitely to infuse it into a molasses and give it to babies to make it more palatable. But it's a very powerful plant that really is good for just overall immune, to also address nervous conditions, stomach ache, worms. It's just that go-to plant that really is good for that. And so that was the plant that many African enslaved people use to help ward off illnesses for them.
Wow, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. I love what you were saying earlier as well about how you learn through stories, that you remember through stories. Are there any, I also love that. And I love that about mm-hmm. plants. And are there any stories that come to mind for you about Asafoetida or any other plants that you'd like to share right now?
Yes, definitely. The plant that comes through to my mind is definitely collards. Now, collards is one of those plants that many African Americans we experience. And so it's also the plants that we talk and share stories over. That plant is just that food crop, not only is just a source of nourishment, but it's also a source of community. It's a source of time where we can have talk and discussion and stories over a meal, over something as nourishing as a pot or a bowl of greens. So that story was lived just throughout my life, you know, watching my grandmother prepare her greens, and or she would go out in the garden, or she would tell me, okay, you need to help me clean these greens, and you need to go ahead and get the salt water ready. And just that whole routine of having her bring these big old leafy greens and put them in that salt water and pouring that salt over the back of the leaves to kill those little crazy bugs, getting those greens nice and clean, and then watching how she would cut them, and then watching how she would just carefully cook them and prepare them. And they were always had the perfect texture, the perfect taste. And then the pot liquor, I would watch her drink it, which is the broth from the greens. And just the way she would masterfully create such a nourishing dish for us. So that was always the backbone of my cooking. But then also as I got more into my herbalism, that is now really a bedrock of just my identity as an African-American, as many of us. That's like that's the food crop that identifies us as well in this country, because that's the food source. That is the source of our resilience. That's the plant that we look to, that nourishment, resilience, resistance, all those things is in that plant. So that's not really a story. It's a story, but it's not. She told me a story about greens, and then I learned about it. I watched that story being played out in action. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, it's a very embodied story.
That's right.
Yeah, I love that.
Embodied story. Yeah, that thing. There's some other ones that come as mints. She had about three different types of mint in her. Oh, back to the collard greens. There is a story. I'm sorry. So one of the things she used to love to do is when she would plant her greens, she would plant greens in the front yard and greens in the backyard. And so her thought there was, well, for the greens are in the front yard would be for the birds, would be for them to go ahead and eat and pick on and peck. But then the greens in the back, they wouldn't want to come and fly over there and bother her greens. And so it made sense to me as a kid, because I could see, she would say, those greens in the front, don't pick. We're not going to eat that. That's for the animals, which I thought made sense. I mean, how ecologically sensitive was that in a time when it wasn't that popular? But that's how she thought. And so her greens in the back, she would have different screens and stuff like that to keep them away in case they decided to fly back there anyway. But I really loved really what was behind that approach. And that was that being mindful of all the other creatures too, and not just your thing. So that's that story with that. But the mint story, again, she had rows of different types of mint, from spearmint to regular peppermint, that she would grow in the front and in the back. And one of the things, one of her favorite teas she would love to prepare was different teas using mint. And so I would remember how she would, one day she would tell me, okay, you go out and you pick those mint and bring it in and let's go ahead and make our tea. So I would go and pick it, bring it back. And then she'd be, you know, cooking. And then she'll say the prayer, God, may this plant do what you intended it to do, even just for us, even if the tea was just for us. So she would do that. And then she would talk about health and healing and all those things while she was making and preparing her tea. So mint was definitely something that was a part of my growing up and watching her. And that was like the plant that at least she started me with was that was mint.
Well, that is incredible. Your grandmother sounds amazing. Just yeah, an absolutely was. Amazing person.
Yeah, she was an amazing human being. She lived to be 100 and she passed away last year.
Wow. And what was her name?
Her name was the Reverend Dr. T.A. Ward.
So good. Well, Dr. Reverend T.A. Ward, we are so grateful for her life, for her contribution, for her approach to plants. I love what you shared there about how she had the front for the animals, the back for the people.
Yeah.
We could all use more of that approach.
Yeah, she was a good land stewardess. She knew how to take care of the land. And I really just loved watching her. Gardening was her passion. That was her thing. Yeah. That's why they called her the Green Lady.
I love that. The Green Lady. So good. Is there anything else that you're feeling called to share about?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Just to point back to Black North American herbalism. And again, the why really is, and I think we talked about it a little bit earlier, was something that I've been advocating for a lot in herbal education is really, let's clarify the meaning of Western herbalism. Like, what do we mean by that? You know, what are we talking about? And so I've come to conclude that really what they're talking about is the herbal system and herbal pharmacopoeia of Western Europeans. And again, Europe has an herbal history, an herbal tradition, an herbal culture. No denial. But here in North America, it's not Europe. Europeans were not the original people here. Europeans settled here and had to learn by way of our Native American brothers and sisters how to interact with the plants here, which they had a hard time doing, actually. They really did. So if it wasn't for Native Americans, many of them would have died coming off of the Mayflower. But one of the things that I discovered, or I continue to discover in my research, is that when they would interact with plants, they would overact or they would use them too much. And so with that, then it's the claim that, oh, this plant is toxic. This plant is poisonous. This plant you have to handle very carefully. And really what they're speaking to is their own experience. And so over time, that became the approach, not because it was generally safe for everyone else, but they would say that their own experience, apart from Native Americans, even from African Americans. And so the reason why knowing the herbal experiences of other cultures here is really vital, because that gives us really critical information about how plants were interacted with here by Native Americans, African Americans, Asians, and even those who are from Central America, places like Mexico. Those places, they tell us how these plants were worked with. And so the shift I keep coming up against is Europeans' ability to interact and really settle into the plant life here. And so people like, or groups like the School of the Eclectics, they began to incorporate more European herbs and bringing some of those herbs here. And that became their materia medica or their library and their lens to understanding plants. And so what we're seeing, or what I'm seeing rather, in a lot of herb schools and education, is herbalism being taught from that perspective. And so what I'm hoping to do with Black North American herbalism is to begin to inspire that we learn different ways of how we can interact with plants. Something we were saying earlier in the call, how to interact with plants. And that's really critical because it widens our tent. We're able to have more in our arsenal about how to help and support a wider range of people. We're not limited. You know, we're not just talking about the Carl Linnaeus nomenclature, i.e. scientific name of a plant. We're not just talking about constituents of the plant. It's not just that. I mean, there's a whole host of other things that the plants do offer that science has not even been able to touch. And so this is why other cultures, this is where I firmly believe, this is where they were able to see into that. And this is why, certainly with African Americans here, being an herbalist was also seen as a calling of God, because it wasn't just your human effort and your human diligence to make sure that you knew what plants were and you knew how to identify. I mean, that part is important, but also the ability to use herbs to help heal the body, that was seen as a divine, that was God giving you direction to do that. And it's still certainly, that's my perspective even now. And that was the perspective of my grandmother. And even other cultures, they knew that the creator of the plants, it wasn't just about how studied you were. So that's why other cultural herbal tradition, at least understanding them, is really helpful, because then it just, again, it widens the tent. And so that's what I'm hoping that with Black North American herbalism will help to inspire more of these conversations, and that we really begin to look at shifting how we're teaching herbalism here. And I can only speak of really the West Coast, but I think probably broader across the United States as well.
Yeah, thank you. It's so, so important, and just brings to mind how when we're looking through a framework, say, for example, we're looking through a pair of glasses, but we don't realize we're wearing the glasses. Mm-hmm. If we take them off, what does it mean to experience a wider view? And mm-hmm. I'm curious if you have any tips or suggestions for folks who are interested in connecting with a more multicultural approach to herbalism.
Mm-hmm. First, start with who you are. Who are you? Where's your family from? You know, starting with what you saw, if you saw anything at all, but maybe asking questions, maybe starting with your food, like what were your foods? Because food is also medicine. And so maybe asking, well, why did auntie or grandma use this particular ingredient? Maybe, for example, parsley. That was the one ingredient that you always saw that, you know, your grandma, even your dad or grandpa use a lot in their food, right? But then, of course, as you maybe go further, well, what is parsley? And then you're like, okay, how is it grown? How does it taste? And then you go further, well, what else is in this particular plant? So you start to develop this relationship first through your oral story in the kitchen. Because sometimes we forget that herbal medicine was made in the kitchen. Was it made in a lab? We get caught up. It wasn't made at, you know, the Food and Drug Administration. No disrespect. But it was made in your kitchen. And sometimes the herbs, the plants were right there in the food that your people made. And so that's your starting plate. Why did they always, what was it about that plant or apple mint? What was it about apple mint that just Auntie kept putting in there? What was that? And then it's like, that's the starting place. And then maybe learning about, well, where's Auntie from? How did we come to even live where we live? Oh, well, what plants are around where we live? One of the things I do teach with students is wherever you go, the plants are there to help you adapt to that space so that you can thrive. And so now that's not a scientific theory. That's just my disposition based on my own observation. So wherever I live on this earth, first thing is, what are the plants? How can the plants help me thrive? So what is it I need to know about the plants so that I can stay healthy, stay well, whatever. And so even in the one's personal experience, starting with your food story, starting with your ingredients, because those are plants that they're working with, whether it's a spice, whether it's an herbaceous plant, whether it's a powder, those are all plants that are connect, that will help connect you to, oh, okay, there's something special about these ingredients that my parents kept using that I need to hook into. And then you work out from there. So sometimes you got to start small before you go big. And I think that's what I share with students. Start with you first, start with your family first, start with what you've seen, and then work your way out. And then you'd be surprised what you discover, that you'd be like, wow, all this time they did this because of so-and-so and so, and I didn't know the plants. I know this plant had this attribute or whatever. And so that's where I recommend people to start.
I love that. Starting with the relationship first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And sometimes it really is simple. It really is simple. When in African American culture, one of the things that you may know of this from reading and hearing stories is the singing and the field songs while they would work, but also while they would work with plants. I remember my grandmother, and this is a story, I would hear her sing when she'd be in the kitchen making things or making tea or whatever, you know? And so there are accounts of how they would do the same. You know, they're out in the field, or they're out, there would be some sort of song that they would sing, or they would be praying, you know, or sometimes they would be talking straight up, you know, because we know scientifically that yes, plants do respond when you talk to them. We know that. That's, you know, that we know, well, science is catching up to that. That's old. But it's that as well. And so it's tapping into your familial background. And then there's also a historical picture to your particular ancestry. I know for me, definitely there's that as well. There's also a lived experience and seeing how my grandmother would be in her garden. And she wasn't a singer, but she loved to sing out there. And so likewise, when I'm out here in my little garden, I talk to my plants, I'll sing. They respond very well to that as well. And so that is how we can really foster that relationship.
I love that. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So great. And I'm curious to hear too, how would you say that the plants support you in your life's work?
Well, the plants are the work. And so really it's two things. Like I say, even to my clients, that if there's a plant that I haven't interacted with, I won't use it in a formula and I won't recommend it. So I feel that it's definitely my responsibility to get to know that and get to know and interact with that plant as best I can. And I always try to keep it simple. Let me just make a tea first, or I'll make a tea first. And then it's like, if I know where it's growing, let me go and see it and check it out. You know, so there's those ways to get acclimated, to get acculturated to a particular plant. But yeah, I mean, as an herbalist, as an educator, the work is the plants, is being able to speak about them, but also speak to them intimately. And again, you don't have to know all the plants all over the planet. Just know the plants where you live, or the plants that you have an affinity towards. And I'll ask my clients that, what do you know about herbs? What do you know about plants? Is there a particular plant that really speaks to you? So one of my clients was like, oh, ginger, or oh, chamomile. Oh, really? Tell me why that is. Tell me why you like that plant so much. And there's some kind of reason when you just, I just, the way it's such a pretty plant, or when I drink it, I always just feel so calm. So then I know, oh, that's a plant I probably want to put in their formula, because they have an affinity. And now I'm also able to speak to the many different attributes that plant has to offer. But yeah, plants are the work. Plants are the vehicle by which I use to help support people. And even to, it's also the bridge to help address cultural diversity, because every culture has interacted with plants. The problem, at least in America, is that we're trying to truncate who interacts with the plant and how, and whether or not if their approach is better than everybody else's. And that's subjective. You know, so we all have that jump off point that we all have experiences in working with plants. And so let's learn as much as we can and let's be respectful. But then that also helps to bridge those gaps. So plants definitely are very viable in my work and also in really what I do in the herbal space.
Amazing. Well, Sherelle, tell us, how can people find out more about you and your work?
Yes. And so you can find me on Instagram at Exalted Natural Body Care and Botanicals. You can also find me at the same handle on Facebook. A website is coming. And you can also email me at wholebody1@gmail.com.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Just such an honor. And I love your approach with the plants. Such an incredible honor to have you join us. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
And thanks so much for listening and joining us today on the Plant Spirit Podcast. I hope you enjoyed it, and please follow to subscribe, leave a review, and look forward to seeing you on the next episode.